3, 2, 1.
Here we go! Welcome everyone to the No Normal Show, brought to you by BPD. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the bold, while delivering the future to healthcare's leading brands. I'm Desiree Duncan, Vice President of Health Equity and Inclusion. And today I'm joined by, of course, Stephanie Werwol, EVP of Engagement. Hi, Steph.
Hi, Des.
And then we have, of course, a very special guest, longtime friend of BPD, Nicole Baxter, Chief Brand Officer of HCA Healthcare. Welcome to the pod, Nicole. Excited to have you.
So excited to be here, Des. And hello, Stephanie.
Hello. This is going to be a fun chat. I am so excited to hear everything you have to say about all things brand and culture and everything going on in your world.
It's going to be fun. I always have fun talking to the two of you, so I'm excited to see where the discussion goes. You never know.
Exactly. But before we get into all that, we're going to, because of your role of brand officer, we're going to talk about all things brand. You know, some of, I know Stephanie's favorite conversations and mine as well. I love to just kind of go down all of the tangents and throw things at folks on this. But before we jump into that, what are you kind of getting into? I know you've been talking about the Stanley Cup. What's been exciting for you during this playoff season?
Yeah, my son, Grayson, who's 12, recently took up hockey. And so I have become an expert in all things Stanley Cup and hockey and stats and all the things that he talks about. Like, it's just second nature to him. And I've been entertaining myself through the Stanley Cup process that he's loving going through, is by really engaging with a lot of the commercials and, you know, looking at how that brand is representing itself. Not a brand I would usually go deep into, but in terms of just being a very traditional, long-standing brand in all of North America, really looking at how are they establishing themselves with the next generation and how are they staying relevant. So I think it's very interesting for anyone who's interested to look at how they really invoke emotion into this very, you know, special but high pressure time of their sport. So it's been interesting to look, take a look at that.
Would you say it feels a bit different from NFL, NBA in that regard?
You know, Des, no one will ever accuse me of being a sports expert. I'll tell you that for sure. I get laughed at often when I try to make, you know, 2-yard play examples or hit it out of the ballpark examples. I'm constantly being told that's the wrong sport or that's the wrong reference. So I do think the NFL and admittedly, I got into the NFL when Taylor Swift got involved in the NFL. But I do think it's interesting how they've capitalized on that sort of social currency of Taylor Swift and how they've leveraged. I don't want to get any negative comments for affiliating Taylor Swift to the NFL, but I do think it is, you know, for an audience that's been untapped for generations, has really started to take a new look at the game.
Well, you're in good company here, because both Des and I joke sometimes about sports ball and our lack of understanding. So yes, I'm with you on, like, Taylor Swift got me into football a little bit. More recently, the show Running Point with Kate Hudson got me into basketball. So anything that gets me into hockey or basketball, and hockey's been having its moment for the last decade or so. So I love the way you're coming at this, because I actually think, you know, your point about broadening to new audiences is really interesting.
Speaking of which, it's funny, something came up around, this is when I was at ShushMed, and Snoop Dogg actually talked about wanting to get into NHL, buy a team, so that he can help push the brand forward. He saw what was going on, of course, with NBA and NFL, which is why I brought him up, but that he feels like there's really this great opportunity, especially what we've been seeing with the WNBA. Like, I will always be pushing that, because I've been obsessed with watching that brand thrive. But
oh, yeah. I think, Des, he was, and I stand to be corrected, but I think he, if I recall correctly, he was one of the coaches for one of the games they did out in LA, one of the NHL, to benefit the firefighters. And I just have to say, so I'm a huge Snoop fan. I think he's amazing. And I think two of the best brand examples in the world are Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart. The way yes. that they have been able to, like, I remember listening to, you know, Snoop Dogg when I was in high school, and he was cool then, and that was a long time ago. And he has reinvented himself and reinvented himself and stayed relevant. I mean, people just, he has built brand equity for himself in a way that is just to be admired. Whether, regardless of what you think of him, he is a brand genius, in my opinion.
1,000%. Because it came up because they were talking about, like, you know, your brand legacy. And this keynote speaker was the difference between, like, these 90s stars who got their start, or rappers even. It was between Vanilla Ice and Snoop Dogg. And Vanilla Ice was still very much talking about, like, oh, I missed the 90s. The 90s were great. And it's like, ooh, sweetie, that was like 30 years ago. And where Snoop Dogg has been just continuing to rebrand, as you've mentioned. So, but yeah, we want to dive in a little deep about, you know, who you are and a little bit of your background. I know that you actually grew up in Canada, which doesn't have exactly the same kind of healthcare set up the way that we do in the U.S. So I'm very curious, how did you get into healthcare marketing and branding based off of that?
I mean, yeah, it's astounding that after all these years. So I grew up in Canada and the United States, but very familiar with, I went to university in Alberta, and never would have dreamed, and I didn't even know that healthcare marketing was a thing, right, when I was growing up. And after university, moved to Boston. I wanted to be Ellie McBeal, if I'm being totally honest. She was my point of reference back then. That's going to date me, but, and tried to break into advertising and was rejected is a strong word, but, you know, I had no experience. I applied at many different Boston-based agencies and could not get my foot in the door, and ended up moving back to Florida after a couple of wonderful years in Boston, and met a woman who happened to be a CEO for HCA Healthcare, and she was located in Palm Beach. And it was more about just loving her energy and loving what she stood for and not really understanding the role itself. But it was an entry level position into marketing. And I give her a lot of credit, and a lot of people that I, you know, started the job with teaching me, because, again, I don't have a degree in marketing or in healthcare. And just being able to observe and listen and speak to the physicians, learn from the physicians, learn from people around me. And I really almost instantly loved it. I loved the mission behind, you know, talking about the stories that I was witnessing in this hospital every day and being able to stand and be part of these incredible stories and to spread the word of what I saw these physicians and nurses and administrators and custodians and, you know, transporters and all these people that I interacted with every day. You know, how do we tell that story and how do we fulfill that mission in ways beyond the hospital? And that's what really got me into it. And gosh, it's been, I just had my 20th anniversary at HCA Healthcare in January. I can't believe it. It seems like 30 seconds and, you know, 30 years all at the same time. So, yeah, it's, that's how I got into it. And I've continued to love and build upon it from the people that I've had the pleasure of learning from and working alongside all these years.
I love that. Congrats.
Wow. Thank you. That's amazing. And I love hearing your story. I have a question for you. So I think that just, you know, having been around you a little bit for the last year plus, it's been incredible to see your incredible knack for, you have this knack of like distilling an insight, right? And identifying and being like, I heard this from a physician and it made me think XYZ, or I saw this from a nurse and it made me think, what if? Like, you're very much a big thinker, a visionary, and you have this ability to be a sponge and summarize and identify this incredible idea. Is that something that you feel like you were born with, or did you develop that? Did it come over your time of, you know, those last couple decades? Like, where did that come from?
I think, thank you. That's a very nice compliment, Stephanie. I think that it's two part. I think some of that intrinsically is who I am and who I've always been. But I think keeping that tool sharp and continuously educating myself. But I think the most important thing you said, and what I try to do, and I'm not always great at it, but really try to pay attention and listen. And, you know, we've talked about this as a group many times, that inspiration is literally everywhere. And it can come from the physician. It can come from someone, you know, you see on the street. It can come from a message or an ad from a message that's completely out of category. Just paying attention and listening and observing and connecting the dots is hard, but it's easier if you are continuously listening and looking and seeing, and people will give you inspiration beyond your wildest expectations if you just pay attention, I think.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm always kind of looking outside, of course, like our industry, but just kind of looking and just whenever I travel, trying to see like what kind of makes this area, you know, tick or different. But I'm curious, what's been the most inspiring things that you've been seeing here lately?
Oh, my gosh. So you and I talked about this last week. I had just had the privilege of traveling to Spain with my sister. And I think it was the most incredible time and the most incredible experience. But even getting out of your environment and getting out of the things that you are interacting with. I mean, I have a tendency, I'm sure we all do, of this routine. You know, you're in this routine and the things that you do every day. And I think to your point, Des, being in different environments, but then also looking outside of healthcare. We talk about this all the time as a group, you know, how do we think about redefining our competition? And we were joking last week when we were talking about Netflix as an example. So Netflix, and I learned this, gosh, several years ago, and it has stuck with me ever since. And I use this as an example. Netflix does not describe their competition as Hulu or Disney Plus or Max. They describe their competition as sleep. And I think, Steph, you had an example from another category. I'm trying to remember which one that was.
Yeah, it was the beverage category. So Dr. Pepper Keurig describes their category as stomach. So share of stomach is what they're trying to do. And it's not about knockout Coca-Cola, though, of course, that's part of the goal. But it's also about what are people snacking on, or, you know, it could be water. It could be anything that you're putting in your body. So the competition is so much broader than the direct competitors.
Right. I think, and I feel very strongly about this, and I spend a lot of time thinking about this and talking about this. And, you know, sort of I was telling Des last week, I think I've said this so many times that I've convinced myself that I said it, but it was for quoted from someone else. I'm borrowing their words, but the boring slot in healthcare marketing is taken. And if you look at this sea of sameness of healthcare marketing, banking, you know, I think has caught up a little bit, but you look at these highly regulated industries, and highly regulated doesn't mean boring. I mean, you can still be authentic. You can be emotional and not looking in the rearview mirror all the time at what your competitors are doing. But what are the audiences that we are trying to engage with looking at? You know, my son, I mentioned Grayson is 12. I was reading a stat the other day about the average attention span over the last 20 years has gone from 12 and a half seconds to 6 seconds. People would accuse my attention span of being less than a second, but we'll save that for another discussion. When we order something from Amazon, if it's not there the next day, his reaction as a 12-year-old Gen Z audience is, why is this taking so long? And so as we think about behaviors changing and this generation comparing how we interact with them to Instacart, Amazon, you know, all these sort of on-demand delivery services, and how the expectations have changed, and how hospitality and Airbnb and Uber have disrupted and changed how people look at things. I think we would be foolish as healthcare marketers not to pay attention to that. And I think we're catching up with how to do that in a meaningfully different way.
I mean, especially in a hospital, like it's in the title, like we're at our core, we're in the hospitality game. And so essentially looking at what are others in this particular world, what are they doing to create that experience for their visitors or who are thinking about that from a standpoint from patients? So I know that that's very much on top of mind for you as well, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. I mean, I think that the hardest thing as a brand person or as a marketing person, especially in healthcare, is the internal persuasion of brand is not a logo. Brand is not your advertising. Brand is not the sign on the door. You know, fill in the blank. Brand is the experience. Brand is how we're making people feel. Brand is how we're making our colleagues feel when they, you know, interact with us, when we engage with them, our patients, our physicians. And I think taking a human look at what does that mean? And I think you guys, I give you a lot of credit for the work that you have done in this category with sort of breaking the mold and how do we get really deep into how do we understand the audience? How do we sort of get inside the heads of motivations, not just functional, but emotional as well? And I think that's what's changing the game for us. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what could ultimately change the category. And hey, at the end of the day, all healthcare is trying to take care of patients and take care of our people and provide healthier tomorrows. And I think that as a category, as an industry, if we all sort of move in that direction, it ultimately benefits the patient and it benefits our people. So that's my perspective on that.
I love that. I want to pull it a thread here because I think you're kind of combining so many really interesting connected thoughts. So I love this point you make about the competition first and foremost. And I think that ties so beautifully to what you were talking about around inspiration comes from everywhere. So if we think about the competitive set of not other hospitals necessarily, but I'm hearing you talk about, you know, how people take care of themselves, get care, health, even hospitality. How do you sort of define what is the broadest competitive set in your mind for healthcare?
I think the competitive set is the products that people are engaging with that ultimately define their experiences and their expectations. And that may be different depending on what segment we're talking about. So another thing we've talked about, both Steph and Des, is it's not a one size fits all, right? I mean, you think about, I remember, if I can tell you a funny story, I remember, and hopefully this CFO will not watch this, but he'll know who he is. I remember bringing a strategy, gosh, probably 15 years ago, and it was all centered around women's health and the OB category and how are we engaging differently back then it was so transactional. And, you know, how do we pull out that emotional component? And, you know, worked with the agency on putting what I thought was a pretty creative and innovative approach and brought it to the CFO. I think it was to get signed off on from a budgetary standpoint. And he looked at it and said, I don't like it. And I remember saying to him, and thank goodness I did not get walked out the door after, I said, when you become a 30-year-old woman, your opinion matters. And that is another thing that we are moving towards. We're not there yet, but that, you know, understanding your target audience, that a 30-year-old woman is not a 55-year-old man and a 65-year-old female is not a 40-year-old man. And people have different motivations. Their perceptions are shaped by their generation, by their technology, by their environment. And I don't think, you think about, you mentioned the beverage category or fill in the blank, banking even, they are so hyper segmented on their approach with language and media and all the things that they use to engage with this audiences, but it's not a, let's see what sticks to the wall. And I think if you talk to everybody the same, you're talking to no one because it's, I mean, even the three of us, if you think about our ages are different, our experiences are different, our locations are different, and we're shaped by, you know, hearing things differently. And so I think we've got to, as a industry, pay attention and be sensitive to that.
Yeah, I know Marcus Collins is a favorite of yours as well as ours. And he mentions that, you know, things are the way that we are, right? And so how we're going to take something in is going to vary. But that emotional state you had mentioned, because healthcare is very emotional. You know, it can be scary. It can be a relief. And so you really want to take a lot of that in consideration, especially for that experience standpoint. I'll give a little anecdote. This was not a sponsored response to this, but as a native Nashvilleian, you know, kind of growing up with HCA in my backyard, my aunt worked at the old Centennial, what used to be called the Centennial Hospital. So I used to spend quite a bit of time there just hanging out because we would go visit her. But, you know, speaking of what you had mentioned about 30-year-old women, essentially where you're given birth or where you go to give birth, you kind of stay with that health system.
Yeah.
And, you know, we went to a Midtown located hospital when I was a kid. Mostly because that's where I was born. And so that's where we always went. And so when my mom had a scare, I took her there. But that experience was not great. And then she went in for a heart stent. And it was the heart doctor happened to be at this TriStar Centennial. And my mom just raved about the patient experience. And so much to the point that we're going to be flipping and thinking about, you know, where are we going to go moving forward? Like, do we change our doctors or what have you? But so much, again, I just reiterate the emotion behind this. And it's like, who took care of me? Who took care of my family, my close friends, when they were really in the most need and thought about all those things? And that's where you kind of carry on, like, that loyalty.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to your point, people remember the moments. And you know, you can have a great outcome medically and not have the best experience because of a number of factors. And I think what you're saying, Des, is so critical, that it's got to be this combination of great care and hospitality and or experience, fill in the word. I think we talked about this several times. I should get a royalty from recommending this book, but The Unreasonable Hospitality, I don't know if you guys have read that.
Yes.
By Will Gudera, who was the head of operations at the number one restaurant in the world, 11 Madison Park. And he wrote a book almost describing what you're talking about, this idea of operations paired with experience, and how these moments that are created, and how do we tell those stories as marketers and sort of be the over the shoulder view and being able to share those experiences. I think it's such an honor to be able to be a part of something like that.
Yeah, it's been a minute since I read that book, so I need to go back and read it again. But I love what you're talking about in terms of, you know, brand. It's not a logo, it's not a sign. It's so much bigger. It's how you make people feel. And that's why the experience is part of it, right? It's not about, you know, advertising. It's so much bigger. And, you know, just connecting around the fact that healthcare is the most emotional industry there could ever be. And yet, for some reason, most of healthcare is very clinical in nature in terms of the marketing. It's very features and benefits forward. And I think what you're talking about is this idea that it's almost unquantifiable how much brand can create an emotional connection, which that is the magic that then makes lifetime loyal patients, which then creates, of course, you know, patient lifetime value. I think one of the other sides that I see you and your team doing so well that's very unique actually in this industry is thinking about the emotional connection with physicians, with colleagues, and the business value of that. I would say so many health systems tend to think of internal comms as, you know, that's where we talk to physicians. And I love that you all really think of brand as so broad. You're thinking about the emotional connection we can create with consumers, with our people, and how all of it ties together.
I am so blessed and lucky to have partners in this company. Our head of communications, Marianne Hodge, and I think over the years have really, discovered the secret sauce in terms of how do we message internally, which is really her team, but then how do we complement her efforts with internal activation and marketing to our own people? And I truly believe and have been, this has sort of been my soapbox for the last little while, and you guys know this, if we can't win our people, if they don't know our message, if they don't know our why, if they don't know our brand, then, you know, it's all for naught, because you can't be messaging externally from a transactional perspective without the inside of the house understanding who we are and what we stand for. And to your point, and this, again, a quote I use all the time, and Des alluded to this, brand is not a department. You know, I tell people all the time, I am not in charge of brand. I can help facilitate, you know, the messaging around that and the packaging of it. But every single employee, our transporters, our environmental service workers, our physicians, our nurses, our valet, our front, you know, volunteers, our leadership, they are all responsible and owners of the brand. And these experiences that are happening every day in all of our sites of care everywhere. And that's a big responsibility, but it is, you think about, and you know, and again, I'll throw my bias. I think HCA Healthcare is a company that always puts its people first and that always, you know, aligns to that why around the patient, and everything we're doing around our mission is inspiring, and it creates brand ambassadors, I think.
So I have a question for you. So we've been talking lately on this podcast about the importance of partnering across disciplines, across functions, between marketing comms, between marketing and finance, between brand and experience, strategy, you name it. And so you just mentioned, you know, a great partnership that you have. What do you think are the best ways to create really good partnerships? Synergy, to use a corporate word here, but really good partnerships across functions.
I think there are no words more motivating in a partnership than "Can you help me?" And you know, I certainly am smart enough to know that I'm not smart enough to know it all. And there are so many amazing people in this organization that rarely, if actually never, have I approached someone in this organization and said, "Can you help me think about this?" Or, "Can you help me, you know, sift through this mess of thoughts in my head and see how we can collaborate on this?" Not once has someone said, "No, I don't have time to help you with that," or I don't want to engage with you on that. And I think sometimes, you know, forcing an issue that's coming from your agenda is off-putting to people. And I think if you approach everything from, there's no I, it's we, you know, we as an organization, we as a company, us as a team, I think that's where the magic happens. I think that's the secret sauce, you know, surrounding yourself with people that are smarter than you and that can think differently and not being afraid to look at outside opinions, which is why I value both internal and external perspectives. I think sometimes the external partnerships I got pushed me to think in ways that I didn't even know I was thinking about or that it was possible to think about. And then the internal piece is taking one puzzle piece and another puzzle piece and figuring out you may be missing one other puzzle piece. And how do you start to bring those things together? I'll tell you this, I would not be where I am, I would not be happy every day. I would not be fulfilled as a person, as an individual, if I did not have the partnerships that I had and the team that I get to work with every day. That's what makes me happy.
Yeah, you're so right. It's all about the relationships and, you know, really making sure that that's strong so that the work you're able to do together through the ups and the downs, you know, really, really sings. I guess I'm curious because we're always, there's this anxious part of us that always feels like we need to already have the answer or, you know, don't ever show anyone that you don't know. You know, what kind of gave you that confidence to be able to say, "Hey, yeah, I don't know, but let's figure this out together"?
Gosh, I mean, Des, it goes back to the people that I got to learn from, right? It was being surrounded very early in my career with, and gosh, I remember, I won't go into too many of them, but there was a lot of mistakes that I made. One funny one was not realizing that I had a budget when I was, you know, at the hospital. And I remember my CEO coming in and, "What are you doing?" And, you know, that was a very tactical mistake. It got fixed, but You know, I think about risks that I've taken, and I've always felt the security of the leadership that I've had and the company that I'm able to be a part of. And listen, I don't want to make mistakes every day, but if I make mistakes once in a while, I think that's okay. And I think as leaders, as you know, we move into leadership roles, you're sort of modeling what you wanted and what you have. And I want, and we talk, I think we've talked about this too. Now I keep saying that. I guess we've talked about a lot of stuff over the last couple of years, but you think about the Coke model, right? Their philosophy around innovation and marketing is 70% of the stuff they're going to do or they're going to spend their investment on is stuff they know is going to work. And 20% is stuff that they're not really sure is going to work, but they have a high level of confidence. And 10 is they don't know if it's going to work and they don't care. And you think about, you know, those Coke cans that have, you know, Stephanie on the side or Des on the side or team on the side, whatever those, you know, all the words I'm seeing will come back too. That was a billion-dollar 10% project. I mean, that was something that someone thought of that no one really thought was going to work. And it created revenues beyond their wildest expectations. And I think for me, you know, you've got to build the trust. And it goes back to Des, what you said. If people trust you and you're not going to make wildly chaotic decisions, but they're rooted in something that matters, it's okay to take a little risk because you've built that confidence over time. So I think it's easier to do to Steph, to answer your question. I think risk is easier the more established you get in your career. But I love risk takers. I love surrounding myself with risk takers. I love bold ideas. I don't, you know, that theme around there's no bad. I really don't believe. I think everything should be put up as an option and then you whittle it down to what we can do. But I don't think if someone says I have a crazy idea, they're getting invited in my office.
Oh, I love that. Let's have a crazy idea party. Just crazy ideas only, no safe ideas. I love that you bring up the 70-20-10 model. I'm obsessed with that. And I think it's so applicable in healthcare because this is a risk-based industry. I mean, at its core, healthcare is all about preventing risk, right? That's what we're here to do in terms of operations. And so the healthcare industry is an operation-driven industry, as it should be. And so from a marketer's vantage point, I think, you know, we see across the entire industry, there is a little bit, well, I would say a lot of risk averseness.
Whoa.
And so I think it's so refreshing to say, no, 10% of our efforts should be about innovation. 70% is what's going to carry it. 70% is what we know is going to work. It's going to bring that financial impact. But if we don't ever do the 10%, we'll never get to those Coke bottle ideas, like you said. And, you know, if 70% is our 100%, if you will, now I'm using all kinds of weird math here, but then it's just going to look like it's always looked and it's status quo. And so it's so refreshing for you to say, bring the crazy, bring the think different.
I feel like I'm just totally ripping up all of Apple's taglines here. Yes, we had an activation here that, gosh, and you guys know what it is. Several months ago that our agency came up with, and the reaction here at the beginning was that seems a little out there. And it was all around, you know, activating emotion with our colleagues. And it was an investment, and it was something that had never been done before. And until the day we launched it, it was, I'm not sure if this is a good idea and should we be doing this? And we did it. And I will tell you, it is the number one thing now that we get requests from the hospitals and from the divisions to do, because it is different. And it's not an ad. It's not a, you know, a tactical execution. It's something that is really getting to the root of connection and emotion. And I think that was when you were talking, Steph, I was thinking, I should probably correct myself and say, you know, not risk averse, but not, you know, it's, I don't want to be innovation averse, mm-hmm. because certainly there is a lot of things that we have to be careful. And I never want to create risk for the company. It's how do we create innovation in an industry that is so highly regulated through different activations and through different emotional connection pieces and things like that. And to, you know, I, whenever you say the traditional, I always just imagine, you know, the doctors with the arms crossed, with the stethoscopes and, you know, all the ads that we've all seen that just, you could like insert logo here. And that's where I'm trying to get away from is let's talk to people from a marketing standpoint, a brand standpoint, in a human forward, in an emotional forward, in an audience forward way.
It's almost like you have to keep that entrepreneurial spirit or that, you know, that startup energy going, you know, throughout your career. You know, stay curious is always kind of the motto that I follow.
I love that. I love, love, love that.
I like the reframing, though, of innovation averse. I think that's a really good reframing because in healthcare, to innovate, it takes an understanding of what's possible and not possible. And there's a lot that's not possible, right? It doesn't mean, you know, to never say no, because there are many things that should not be done, right? But it just means, you know, you mentioned it takes experience to know when you can innovate. And I think that's important, too. To really be able to say, like, it takes experience to know, okay, this is something we should put a bet on and that is not.
Right. I think to kind of add on to what you're saying too, Steph, and you're just making me think, and I admittedly am not good at this, so let me put that disclaimer out there. But I think the focus of prioritization in the things you're trying to do, and not get too distracted by too many things at the same time. And I think that's where sometimes innovation dies, is if you are going after 50 new things at the same time versus two great new things at the same time. And I mean, such an amazing team that keeps me focused. Cause again, admittedly, you know, I'm not a naturally focused person in terms of prioritization, but I think you gotta always keep first things first. And what are you trying to accomplish? And if you're trying to break out of the sea of sameness, making sure or be more innovative as a company, how is everything laddering back to that objective? Because it gets hard, you know, in a big company, in a small company, it, you know, things are flying at you nonstop. And so how do you really focus? And I love that is what you said so much, you know, stay curious. I think that is the smartest thing in terms of, you know, we as leaders, we as marketers, we as communicators, we as all the things, if we're not curious about the next thing, it gets stale pretty quick.
Yeah. And I think that when I think about creativity, which I don't get to be as creative that often, but a lot of times your most creative ideas comes from those limitations. So like Stephanie, to your point, what you were saying about like, there's so many things that you feel, you know, being within healthcare that you can't do, but there is always that little shining diamond that you can rub out from all of that limitations, because you're really making yourself, you know, stay curious, think outside of the box to get to that solution when you are up against so many different obstacles. So,
yeah. And I think too, I mean, I think about the two of you, and I'm not saying this because I'm on the phone with you, but I think about the people that I get to engage with every day and or often, and you two are certainly two of those people, and just the different perspectives that you bring and the different opinions you bring. And I think surrounding yourself with people that aren't going to be yes people, that are going to push your way of thinking. And I value that so much in my team, in my partners, in my agencies, in my creative. I mean, if I can think of the amount of times that, you know, I've thought about something and then I share it with, you know, someone externally or a team member, and they just course correct it or say, let's think about this differently. And it always ends up in a better place, because, you know, a siloed perspective, when you think about brand or marketing, is really no perspective. You've got to have that collaboration that we talked about earlier with different minded, different perspectives, different backgrounds. I mean, I think that, again, I know I've kind of beat that to that, but I think that is where you just get to the next level in terms of thinking and inspiration. And you two do that for me. So I think that's kind of a cool thing.
Oh, we appreciate that. And just being able to have that opportunity to bring those ideas and think outside of the box when there are some of those limitations. But I know, Steph, you might have something to add.
Well, yeah, I just thank you and right back at you. I'm curious. I think we've probably just got a couple minutes more here and I could probably have this conversation all day because you're bringing so many interesting thoughts and ideas. But you've talked a lot about inspiration and you started this convo with getting inspiration from anywhere and you were just chatting about people. I'm just curious, like, where are other places that you go for inspiration? Is it music? Is it culture? Is it, you know, you mentioned travel, like what are the top three or four places you go for ongoing inspiration?
I think the number one, and, you know, again, everywhere, I think listening to conversations is probably one of the number one things that, and whether that's
eavesdropping,
let's not call it eavesdropping. Let's rebrand that to, you know, listening. But I think, you know, if I'm sitting in a meeting and there's a discussion happening about something, you know, what are they talking about? How are they connecting it back to our work? How are they? And there's stuff that I hear all the time that this, you know, someone in the same room is hearing the same discussion. But how are you sort of making the connections and being intentional? It's not something that just comes naturally. Are you being intentional about it? I get a lot of inspiration, and this is going to sound very nerdy. I'm a night owl. I am not a morning person. I'm a night owl, and I love sort of scouring the, you know, Adweek and New York Times, and I, you know, I've got a whole trove of websites that I go to where I'm looking at, you know, ads that are being put out there, discussions that are happening, TED Talks, commercials, and then things that are socially relevant. You know, how are we? And I'll tell you one story that I thought was, and to the point of innovation is everywhere. Going back to Taylor Swift, I hate to bring it back to Taylor Swift again, but we had, when we were working on the nursing strategy, and there was a lady at one of our hospitals in Kansas, and she was watching all this activity happen with Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce when they first started going out. And she innovated against creating, you know, one of those Taylor Swift bracelets with our nursing thematic on it. It's not like a risky, crazy, out there idea, but leveraging social currency of the time. And again, that bracelet that she came up with was then scaled to an organization with, you know, 300,000 people. And the nursing team all just got them for Nurses Week. And so when you think about ideas, inspiration, activate, I think she's a great example of leveraging social currency and paying attention to what's going on in the world. So I do that. I watch videos. I read a lot. And I have to just admit, which I know you know, I love TV. I mean, I'm a big TV person. I love all the, you know, Netflix and Apple TV and all the shows. And I think there's ideas in that too. I mean, between dialogue and how they're representing things. And I probably watch too much TV, but
that's no. never too much TV. Never too much Taylor Swift or too much TV.
Yeah, it's like all those themes start to kind of bubble up. Like I'm always looking for the pieces of the puzzle. I'm like, what? Like I'm seeing this happening over here in this industry. And now they're using this as a subplot for this show. Like what's kind of brewing of where people are is always kind of interesting to me.
I think so. It's interesting. I don't know if you can see on the back. I don't know why I'm going to tell you the story and then I'm going to have people asking me about it. I've had this picture. You guys see what it is in the background?
Is it with the pink?
No, it's the on the wall. So it's a okay. Picture of the Wonder Bread sign. I have had that hanging in my office for 10 years. And only three times in 10 years have I had anyone ask me, hey, why do you have a picture of the Wonder Bread sign hanging on your wall? And the story behind that picture, which I wish more people asked me about, is I think it was, I'm going to get some of the facts wrong. In late 1800s, there was a man named Otto. Gosh, I think of his last name. I should have written this down. Otto Wein, I always pronounce it wrong. Weinbreller. And he created the first sliced bread. And proof in me not remembering his name or being able to pronounce it, he gets no credit for inventing sliced bread, even though he invented the technology, he, you know, actually made it happen. There's stories about this. I think Seth Godin writes a story similar to this in one of his books. Anyways, Wonder Bread gets the credit every time for inventing sliced bread because they packaged it, they marketed it, they put the sentiment behind it. People, I mean, you think about Wonder Bread, and it's probably not the best bread, but the nostalgia that people, I hope no one from Wonder Bread watches this, it's the magic they created around that sliced bread, which is why I have that picture hanging up as a reminder that, you know, we can do all these things in the background, but we still need people to tell the story, to sort of shout with a megaphone, not a whisper, of the things that are happening every day by amazing people and nurses and doctors and patient stories and, and all the things. So anyways, that's my crazy story about Wonder Bread.
And we'll wrap it up there, but essentially just the impact of that, the ripples effect. We're still saying, you know, the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah.
So, yep. Nicole, this was such a treat. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Yeah. I'm excited for all the great things to come and to sort of move together and breaking out of that sea of sameness in healthcare.
Yes, please. All right, and for all of you listening, be sure to subscribe to our newsletter, The No Normal Rewind, which recaps the discussion you hear on The No Normal Show with some extra insights you won't find anywhere else. And expect thought-provoking articles, exclusive interviews, and a few hot takes. You can sign up at the link in our show notes or even subscribe via BPD's LinkedIn. And don't forget that we want to hear from you, so shoot us an email at nonormal@bpdhealthcare.com so that your question may be featured in our next episode. And make sure to share the show with friends and colleagues and give us a review and rating in iTunes and Spotify, preferably 5 stars. That would all be greatly appreciated. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all, and we'll talk to you next week. 3, 2, 1.